Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge. Real talk on the edge. Real talk about real issues.
Welcome, everybody, to the On The Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Thursday, now into Friday, everybody. Thank you all very much for sticking in with me. I just was in the middle of traffic visiting my dad, coming back out. Some idiot decides he wants to go speeding and causes everybody to be sit back and stuck in traffic while they clean up his mess. So I want to thank God that we weren't in the accident. I want to thank God for you guys being here. And I want to thank God for another day of being able to sit here. So, to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio in New York City, currently with isolradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is Grace in New York with the best of live R&B events. As the CEO of Track One Entertainment, to my magnificent team, Lady Diamond Elaine Yeves, DJ Domerica Rodney Williams, Monster Miles, and of course our awesome, priceless panelist and activist out from Toledo, Ohio, Mr. Deacon Zeddy Williams. Thank you, Deacon, for all that you do on and off the air. Thank you for all that you do in the community, your continuous spreading of knowledge and continuing to that each one, teach one situation. Okay. I also want to thank, of course, my wonderful social media supporters, the On The Edge Listeners Lounge, of course, you marvelous group of people, to the my sponsors' two groups, Mr. Mark Pittman's two groups, the Real World Black News and Discussions Group and the Black History Suppress Group, to Linda Miller's Black Love and Conversations Group, to the What About Us group with Professor Carlton Jones, and to the Capitalist End group with Marvin Young. You guys have been fantastic supporters all the way through, from the pre-broadcast questions right up onto the discussions live on the air and otherwise. So I want to thank all of you for that. We are going to go into our pre-discussion song, and after we get back, we will get started after a word from our sponsor. So bear with me, guys. We'll get right into it. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It's a celebration.
Celebrate good times. Come on.
Let's celebrate.
There's a party going on right here. A dedication to last throughout the year. So bring your good times and your laughter too. We gon' celebrate.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. To those of you that have been waiting in and listening, and those of you just joining us, once again, forgive the delay. There was an accident out on the darn Belt Parkway from Brooklyn to Queens because some moron decided he wanted to be a speed demon and dodge a car and didn't calculate enough room for him not to be almost sideswiped by an 18-wheeler. So everybody behind him was stuck. While I'm here, we're going to get started. We are going to continue this much anticipated part two of our previous discussion on Wednesday night, which was, is the black athlete becoming our community's weapon of youth destruction? Okay, and that is what we are going to be focusing on now. We have touched on the Michael Sam situation with kissing his lover on TV, more so about the actual inappropriate display of intense affection such as that than it was about the homosexuality. However, the homosexuality is something that is a same new agenda that they're trying to force feed onto our community, especially to our youth, and making it more like a hip fad rather than it being something that is a personal choice or is a natural thing to happen. It is the way that they're doing it. So I spoke about how Michael Sam's actions seemed to be staged for the camera that was already present, awaiting his response to the draft selection. We spoke about how it seemed like it was something that they were aggressively attempting to show. It was really staged, like this was the shock value or the shock therapy they wanted to put up there because, you know, that gets people talking. Not to mention that the exponential things that took place after was the nonstop airings of it, the repeat broadcast of the kiss itself, the constant talk, because once a black athlete comes forth or a black icon comes forth, the controversy never ends. Not at all, whatsoever. We spoke about the way that that alters from the white counterparts. Funny, I was reading into an actress that I kind of admired growing up because I was watching one of her old Lifetime movies, and that was Miss Patty Duke Aston, which is now just Patty Duke. And her whole biography, so boldly and sweetly, talks about her use with drugs, her multiple sexual partners, which became husbands, how her children's paternity was in question between not one, not two, but three men. However, that was sensationalized. There was a heroic edge to it because she's now a proud and wonderful mother and grandmother. Meanwhile, had this been something that was brought out about a black person or black actor or actress past, this wouldn't have been so glorified. It would have been spoken about with disdain. Now, as much as we speak often about people who don't want to keep hearing about the race thing and don't want to keep speaking about it from a racist angle, that it's just a human thing, sorry, if you're not on the edge of racism, you never will be able to identify with it. So it is a real thing. The victims of it have suffered real damage. What is happening with the victims of the community of that victimized people is just that disastrous. So today, our Catalyst article information is going to be touching on the Mark Jackson termination. Now, we all expected that Mark Jackson would be terminated because apparently the team, no matter that this was a failing team for some time, but under Mark Jackson's tutelage, they have gotten to not just the playoffs itself, but they have won and after not having that opportunity for seasons after seasons on end. Okay, then let's speak about Woodson. Woodson revived the Knicks to the point where they saw the playoffs. They even made it to past game two. They made it to points that they haven't in quite a while. I think that everybody who's a diehard Knicks fan can agree, and those that like to make teasing can agree, that the Knicks haven't really been a hot team to people since the 90s, when Ewing and Starks and Allen Houston and Charlie Ward and all these people were a part of the team. But Woodson made it happen. Woodson made it happen, and it seems that because they didn't actually make a championship or make the playoffs, that all that has been done up to that point is null and void because you didn't get the big ring. Not that being that he was smart enough, inventive enough, and innovative enough, motivational enough to get this team back to being what the great franchise that they were. Okay, so we didn't get it this year, but we got this close. Let's do it again for the next year. Let's work even harder. Let's look at our mistakes. Let's see what all the successes were versus what we could have done better. And let's leave this guy in place to do it better next year, to put whatever skills he's brought to the table to this point in next year. Well, let's speak about what Mark Jackson's rumors and implied things are floating around about his termination. On the surface, of course we expected it. They won, they got this far, but you know what? That's never appreciated. They didn't win a championship. So everybody's up in arms, nail-biting. Let's get the controversy out there. Let's get the big question of the day in the media. Will Mark Jackson's career survive? Well, let's talk about the fact that they also had little birdies whispering about the fact that he's been too preachy, getting on everybody's nerves, quoting scriptures. So in other words, the media is telling our kids that if you're black and you're faithful, it's a stigma, it's a problem. We're going to fire you if you're too spiritual, but we're going to support you if you're too racist, Donald Sterling. So now, is this yet another added item in this already stacked suitcase of destruction for the black community, especially our youth? And I'll tell you right now, in every community, in every lineup, there are the two strongest, actually three, the three most valuable parts of the structure of a community is the male, because they're the leaders, children because they're the future, and elders because they came there, been there, done that, and they lead the way and pass the torch. So everything that's involved with athletes and in media icons and in actresses and actors, what is the main part of that structure that they reach on a massive level? What is the easiest group of people that they can reach that will listen, that are soaking up every word, action, and activity that they're doing and soaking up like sponges and want to be just like them? Is our future. The ones that are strong and pure and innocent, the ones that are resilient, the ones that will forgive and accept anything, the ones that will never see any wrong in you if their heart attached to you, are you. On the other hand, they're the most impressionable, they're the most unprotected, they're the most naive, they're the most endangered because of the fact that everything about them means spit now, think later. And by the time you've gotten them around for their hormones and their anatomical growth to catch up with their social growth and their mental growth, by then too much damage has been done. And in this day and age, the type of damage that usually the average teenage parent has to deal with is double, tripled, and sometimes even quadrupled with everything else that the society is now allowing to happen. Now, couple all of that in addition to the fact that with this war against the African-Americans, we now have yet another piece to put into that already big whirlwind of a war that parents already have on a regular basis, just being able to raise children through the teenage years. So Mark Jackson can be fired with his spiritual faith beliefs, his spirituality, the spirituality that he has obviously used up until this point to motivate this team into where it's at now, when it wasn't doing so well before his duty as a coach. He can be disparaged. He can be condemned. He can have that as a factor in determining whether he stays or goes, because he's too spiritual and he motivates his team and he knows how to be classy about the whole situation. Meanwhile, over in Stonefaceville, we have this moron old over the hill about to be one foot in the grave and the other one on the banana peel, able to be honored and celebrated and uplifted and given time, and an executive decision has to be made before we can even say that that voice on the tape was his, for racism in the same field. So the mixed messages that we're sending out there, none of you believe that this is yet another missile directed at our youth, directed at our men, the same fools that go out there on top of their children's head following these athletes and trying to be just like Mike at 45 and 50. That is the question on the table. I see that I have a panelist trying to come in. So let's see where we're at with this for the evening. Good evening and welcome to the show call. You're on the air.
Hey, this is J-Lo Jenkins, or caller Philippe Jones, calling from D.C.
Thank you very much for sticking in with me tonight. I know that this was a late delayed start. Sorry about that, uncontrollable circumstances. And I do need to ask you, we were on the part one discussion of this. So with the Mark Jackson situation and the implied the implications that his faith and his spirituality was a part of a deciding factor in his termination, do you think that in comparison to the fact that he was condemned for spirituality and morality while this other person was uplifted and honored for his garbage and his filth, is this yet another stick to our youth, or was Mark Jackson's firing simply a justified firing? So that's my question.
I mean, one thing that this points out to me, you know, when I look at the situation with the Mark Jackson firing, the thing is, they bring in a lot of different media exploits into athletics that never were before, and it's really terrible because it shows me that the mainstream media engineers that are taking control of everything, even more so than they were before in a way, right, they're not going to promote positive values. They're not ever going to do it. You see, the society has embraced things that don't allow them to promote, you know, positive values. You know, with the Mark Jackson termination, you know, it's like, okay, all of a sudden they make things that were once taboo, you know, societally. Now they're trendy. And traditional values are now tabooed and vilified. Isn't that crazy? So it's like a double reverse. Because then, you know, now they're saying that religious foundations for your goodness or your motivation or your inspiration are now going to be vilified and tabooed. Why? Why? Maybe because it might offend a group, a certain group of voters. That's what it looks like to me. So everybody is we keep on mixing apples and oranges and politics with sports and this and that and this and that. You supposed to do that, but with some type of tact, they really getting real sloppy and filthy the way that they're just, you know, doing anything, like with everything. You know, the media engineers have always, you know, been trying to, you know, dabble into, you know, it's funny. They've always tried to promote the racism. They've always tried to promote the white supremacy, but I don't think they've always tried to promote, like, the things like we saw the gay lovers kissing at a football draft, whatever they were organizing at that time or doing at that time. Like, this is ridiculous. Since when do we want to see that and we watch in sports? Since when? It's like, you know, all of a sudden now we need to notice this reverse. It points out to me that I think we, you know, unless we go for, you know, black-owned everything, and I'm just talking about the black community or the, you know, if you consider yourself other than the white mainstream images and propaganda society, you know, if we talk about ourselves, we really can't, you know, it's really starting to point out to me we can't deal with anything that's not black-owned, so to speak. I don't mean necessarily owned by a black person, but if it's not promoting the downfall of racism, if it's not promoting, you know, the upliftment of our people, we don't need to deal with it because we can't do it from within those other systems. We see that now. We can't really do it. It's not really happening. So at this point, it's like it's an even greater point where now you must decide. You know, I think as a people individually, we must decide like which direction are you going in, because you can't use the excuse, oh, I'm gonna get in there first and then I'm gonna change it and da da da, because we know they're not even gonna allow you to do that. Because they're vilifying people with traditional inspirational values just because they're associated with the Bible, because everybody wants to bash the Bible now and all that crap, you know what I mean? Because people don't understand anything. Everybody's going off of television and TVs and movies and reality television, which is really just letting you see the dumbest or the worst that you could see, you know. Just give them all the resources they need, but just let's just see people act less than, you know. And
they
people watching it.
Do. They absolutely are, and they're making no secret of it. Panelists, I see you there. I'll call you in just a minute. They are definitely making a blatant effort to show you that every and anything that builds morality, that builds strength, that builds moral fiber, that builds inner strength, that builds confidence in your community is not welcome here. And if you want to continue to have opportunities in this avenue of success, quote, unquote, then you have to play by our rules, and you can't uplift your own. You can't do this for your own benefit. You have to take what we're giving you and further uplift us. That is the deal. I've been watching this different aspects of sports, different aspects of the hip-hop culture, different aspects of our shows. The things, as much as you guys have probably heard me say this on a repeated basis, our reality shows, ridiculous how we accept that that's the only way the media will allow us to be seen on a public forum, is if we're acting like we're gold-digging whores, or we're acting like we're idiots in the street that don't know how to talk English, and all we know how to do is scratch and claw at 39 and 40, that all our aspirations are is to be baby mamas and then look for a sugar daddy to come along, that we want to wear ridiculously long hair pieces and big earrings that we can, heels we can barely walk in, to be walked around at a basketball game. That it's not enticing enough for you to enjoy the sport of the game, that in jerseys, and have the spirit, the team spirit, like everybody else can. You've got to come with jewelry you can't afford and heels you can't handle for the women. And guys have to be clowns or thugs or lazy or beaten down, or they have to be baby mamas, or they have baby daddies, I'm sorry, or they have to walk outside and disrespect their black women and show that they're going to another one in order for this to be something that the mainstream media will allow to be an actual hit or a TV series or a sitcom or something to follow. And the rest of us are walking out there going, oh, did you see how Evelyn Osada smacked Tammy Roman that day? Oh, did you see what Tammy did to Jennifer?
Right.
So let me bring in our next two panelists, actually, to speak their minds. One second. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Lady Barnett, and good evening to the rest of the panelists. And everyone that's on the listening airwaves.
Thank you very much, Deacon. Just hang on. Let me bring in the panelists behind you, and I'll let you have the mic first. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hey, this is Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I just want to excuse myself for being at the gym right now. So that's the background music you hear. But, you know, I just wanted an opportunity to chime in. So I'll be mute in and out. So say hello to everyone, and I definitely want to chime in on what you guys are talking about with this situation tonight.
I absolutely have no problem with music, because I don't hear it, but you are calling from the gym. I appreciate it, especially since I got started late. So, Deacon, your spin on tonight's part two discussion.
Well, well, I want to start off with the Mark Jackson situation. That's something that you have to sit back and say, what is going on here? Here is this man has raised this team up from obscurity to where they were a nothing team, and had them in a winning percentage from the time that he took over the team as the coach. And then you release him, and from what I gather, it's because of some of his spiritual beliefs, which I think is unfair, and I think that is a form of discrimination. And then you replace him with a Caucasian coach that has no coaching experience at all, and then you pay him more than what you were paying Mark Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and if people are walking around with their eyes shut and don't realize that this is more than just about Daniel Sterling, because if you think he's the only racist there in the NBA, you're fooling yourself. Because you have several, I repeat, several black coaches that are experienced coaches and are very good coaches that have been passed over for these coaching positions in the NBA who are very well experienced, but you pass over them for a white man that has no experience and place him in a position to coach a team. Now, that doesn't make sense to me. Not at all. Not at all. You know, and if you think that Mr. Sterling is the only one in the NBA with thoughts like that, you're fooling yourself.
And there's no doubt about that, Deacon. And you just touched on a lot of the business arrangements of it all. Let's talk about the message in it itself. This man was promoting morality. He was, by all word of common team members, motivational. He was giving them, you know, some great motivation behind the scenes. He was saying, I love you, to his team members, you know, things to that effect, to let them know, I appreciate you as a team. I appreciate your efforts. We're going to get there. Don't fall down on yourself. Don't let this defeat be your defeat. Let's work at it again. Let's come back harder and stronger. That he was condemned for, even if that wasn't the reason. And I know many of you sports fans are going to call in and go, no, I think Mark Jackson's was just going to happen. That's just the way it happens in sports. They don't get a ring. That's just it. Guess what? This should never even been an utter of a whisper as a deciding factor, even on a small scale. That should never have been the reason why. And I agree with you, Deacon. Steve Kerr was not a coaching experience candidate. Okay? He was not. And as a matter of fact, I don't remember him being a mainstream player. I remember him being a strong, definite closer. He definitely was a supporting player. Can't knock him for that. He definitely knew how to take them corner shots. But I don't remember him being a mainstream Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or a Shaquille O'Neal, none of that. I remember him jumping on the bandwagon and filling in when the mainstream players started to get tired, when the game was in jeopardy and we needed that strong, fresh leg, you know, closing support. He can't do it straight up, but he can definitely fill in for you. It's like those players that's at the basket and will get that rebound for you. Okay? I don't remember him being a straight-up starter or anything to that effect. So for them, as you said, to not only give this man the position, but they gave him a higher and sweeter contract, and they don't even know what it is he'll be able to do. And my thing is, and I get it, this is the way it goes, that, you know, if you can get these bad players as far down as they've ever been before, and then if they don't get the championship, oh, well, now the coach is on the hot seat. But guess what? Why the hell would anybody who really is intended to make their business run screw up something that's worked to this point, especially if they were given somebody else's mess to clean up and did a damn good job with it? The Knicks hadn't played as well as they've played for a long time until Woodson came along. And instead of them saying, you know what, we didn't get the championship this year, but you've proven yourself all the way up to now, let's see what you can do next year, and then blame him if it doesn't go. No, they said, nope, cut it down. Let's start with a whole fresh player, a whole fresh coach who doesn't know anything about the players, who hasn't gotten to know them, who doesn't understand their problems beyond the court, who doesn't understand what it is that these guys are thinking. That's what a coach does. That's what Mark Jackson did. So it's like, what have you done for me lately? You got that 99. Why didn't you get the 100?
Somebody got to come in and take the credit and the glory. Somebody.
And there you go. But you know what? I think it's an unfair thing. I think it's a bad business practice because you know what? If it's worked to this point, that means you're going to take something, you should take something that's sort of like a good protocol and then keep upgrading it or keep updating it or keep finding out. It worked even better this time. What is the next thing we need to do to move it to the next level? No, that's not
right.
What they do. They say, okay,
coming
stop it right here. Stop it right here, start again. And I think that's stupid because now the players have to get reacquainted or acquainted with a new coach. Now they got to get used to a different style. Now they have to start all over again. Now they have to build confidence in somebody that's brand new. They probably heard it all before. They've been switched around and passed around like a you know,
crap.
A bag of skittles somewhere. So now what do? Professor, you're weighing in on this?
Well, I look at things a little differently, and I try to look at things from outside of the box. When we think about sports, we have to understand that sports represents a microcosm of our society. So things we see playing out in sports are also playing out in the greater society in much larger and more important ways. We take, for instance, this whole Mark Jackson situation and him being fired and replaced by, you know, a white counterpart with no experience. That didn't just happen in San Francisco or the Bay Area with Golden State. That's also going to happen in New York, and it's also going to happen in other cities where black coaches are being replaced. Mm. And the same way that we see black coaches being replaced or the same way we're seeing black politicians being replaced, that we're seeing civil rights laws come off the books and being expanded to include everybody at the exclusion of the black community. And we're also seeing different policies and so forth going in place, just like the culture that Donald Sterling spoke of recently when he was recorded saying all those harmful things.
Right.
Now, as we look at all these things, we have to really take into consideration the comment that was made by Larry Johnson, who is an executive with the New York Knicks right now, about us starting our own leagues. I know that I saw an interview today. Not necessarily an interview. Isaiah Thomas was the guest host on one of those ESPN shows. And Stephen A. Smith asked a question about, you know, something that Sterling had made mention of, which is that when blacks do well, they don't give back to their community. They don't want to help anybody. He sort of pussyfooted around answering it, the question. But he said something that strikingly reminded me of something that Jay-Z has said in response to Harry Belafonte requesting that he and Beyonce become more charitable. And he's basically said that Magic Johnson's success was inspirational to the black community. But he bounced all around as the weather first, elite Africans gave back, and secondly, if it's time for us to have that discussion. There's always time for us to have that discussion. And I think one of the things we need to start pushing the envelope for is two things. One, we really need to revisit the whole process of reparations because everybody continues to take all these so-called gains that were put in place for the black community. Affirmative action, civil rights laws. All these things are coming off the books now. We need to revisit creating a financial base where we can force other communities to recognize that it's time for us to be compensated as a community, not just for slavery, but for Jim Crow, for black codes, for redlining policies, et cetera, that went on from the time the first ship landed here in America till today, and it's ongoing. So I think we need to start turning the conversation in that direction. And when you look at the athletes, are they being emasculated? Of course. Are they being stripped in public? Of course. But it's going to happen as long as we are just bit players, pawns on the chessboard for white supremacy.
And you know, and what really bothers me now is what I'm thinking. Okay, this man, like whatever motivation he planted in these players, one, it's not even going to go anywhere. But this white man, who they hired in a discriminatory way, you know, is going to come in and take the credit for whatever future successes they have as well. And we see this, and like you said, microcosm to the macrocosm. You know, if we do, as we do revisit reparations, and that's why I think we need to keep pointing out these discriminatory practices, you know, and with Donna Sterling admitting everything on tape, you know, certain people shouldn't have a problem within that arena. All right, maybe, just maybe the discriminatory termination of this man needs to be addressed, maybe. And also, maybe people should, I don't know. But I do think we need to pull out of the league at
some
point.
My concern with all of this is that we already know society is not our nurturers. We know this. We've spoken about this, even without the race situation being in the way, where nowadays parents' jobs are a lot worse. And being that the parents are of a different caliber than what our parents mm-hmm. were, because they're younger, they're more single, they have their own issues, they're all trying to regain youth or, you know, do whatever, they've given in to frustration
mm-hmm.
rather than dealing with it. So that's already an issue. Now add in the, how do you say the word, diaspora of the black community. Now let's talk about the internalized hatred that has been instilled upon us and chosen by us, because we do it to ourselves on choices. Now let's talk about the feminization of our men, the emasculation of our men. Now let's talk about how we can't blame the people we know is doing it, because that might be taking away the little penis they do give us. So let's go full force on the ones that would have our back. Let's start mocking ourselves for everything that we do to better ourselves while we sit there and go to other cultures who are doing the same exact thing, probably knocked us down to get it, and say it's okay with them. So my problem now is athletes and media icons of the, you know, the black success stories, okay, having messages like this go out to show our children that Jesus is no longer an issue, or not, if it's not even Jesus, let's just say it's a God you serve, something that gave you some moral structure. Now, I'm a Christian, right. So my God is my God, okay? But whatever it is that guided you into morality, that gave you a sense of what's right and what's wrong, that guided your conscience, that says this is just too much to do, this is inhumane, this is disrespectful. All of those things now are being shot down by the one thing that will do it in a quick second on a massive level. It's like taking to social media. You post one thing and you can have 750,000 views in 3 seconds. So what's the best way to go in and infiltrate a virus, a guided missile, a ticking time bomb? Is to do but to do it through the Trojan horse of our society. That's through athletes. So now, having people say, and you know what, even if that was the deciding factor or a thing, this is where, again, I say it's a deliberate attempt to show this. If this had been a factor in a white man's firing, would they have even mentioned that his face was a possibility, that people were he was getting on people's nerves by talking about his Protestant faith? They wouldn't even let that be seen in the media. It wouldn't have been mentioned or whispered anywhere. I brought up Fatty Duke Aston today in the commentary because I read about this woman. Okay, I followed her in a lot of movies growing up and everything. She is a compelling actress. The thing is, they've glorified her struggles, quote-unquote, with drug use. choices that she made. They glorified her breakdown mentally. They glorified her promiscuous behavior between three different men. They glorified her child's need to find his own identity by running his own DNA test, only to find out that it wasn't either one of the two guys she thought it was because she slept with them around the same time, but it was the man she married to dispel and give her child a name. So if that had been something with us, if it had been Beyonce, and I'm going to use her because she's the biggest name people can think of off the top of their head in the black world. If it had been her, she would have been painted as a whore.
Yeah.
She would have been painted as an immoral example.
Mm-hmm.
You see how this Solange and Jay-Z fight in the elevator hasn't even been rested yet. And they didn't even have audio to even hear what the actual argument was about. But everybody's got speculation. Everybody's wondering. Did anybody wonder why that a grown old man smacked an 18-month-old African-American child on a plane? No, they excused his choice to drink and coupled it with the sweet icing of grief to his son's death. Did anybody stop to find out what was in the mind of Michael Dunn when he chased a car of teen kids to shoot and shoot and shoot because he didn't like their choice of music? No, they explain that it's a, you know how they get when they drink. But let that have been an alcohol-induced action by somebody like Jason Collins, who also happens to be gay. Like somebody like Magic Johnson, who, tell me, did anybody sit there and glorify his courageous move to come forth and expose that he had HIV? Is anybody glorifying the fact that despite the hurt and trauma it must have caused his wife, that those two as a black couple stood against all the odds and are still together today? No. What they're doing is now emphasizing the fact that his son is gay.
Right.
They're not glorifying that this man came forth, and I can guarantee you not one person sat there and glorified Jason Collins or Michael Sam, saying that he paved the way for Magic Johnson's son to feel free to come forth. That's not the way they're spinning it in the media. They're spinning it as a gossip story of the century.
They exploit us so badly. We just need to get away from these people.
Yes.
At what point do we get to the point where we're not surprised anymore that they treat us like they treat us, if they depict us as they depict us? That's the whole, you have to understand, the media is not about money. It's always been about propaganda. You know, I was funny. I was speaking with the elder just yesterday, and we were talking about the old double feature movies. And she's in her 70s, so her experience with them was different than mine. And she was talking about how when she would go to the movies, there would be some attraction, there would be a newsreel about what was going on in the world, they would have a movie, many movies, you know, miniature movies in between, and then the final feature. Now, we both spoke about what was on that newsreel. What was on that newsreel was propaganda about World War II, propaganda about Vietnam, propaganda about the Korean War. The media has always been about propaganda. It means a fall guy. It needs a boogeyman. It needs a reason to perpetuate the treatment of African Americans in this country. So it always focuses on negative stereotypes. And when one is not there, it can create one with hip-hop. It can create one with movies. It can create one just by putting a story or picture and spinning it any way they want to. And it's just like, what's the guy, Bernays. It's just like what he stated, and he's the father of all propaganda. You tell a little lie, and you keep it simple, and you keep telling it until people believe you.
Right.
Eventually, we have to continue to build up media like yours and other honest media that portrays our community in the way that shows the creativity and the positive things we can do. And we also need to show how we can build, not just as inspiration, but real tactical building within the community. We got to stop relying on the white media establishment to tell our story, because they're never going to tell it the way it needs to be told, only to glorify them and to always paint us as either victims or criminals.
Absolutely. And, Professor, I do want to make a clarification. From my end, I'm no longer surprised about a damn thing. I am not surprised anymore. As a matter of fact, I have seen the racist light. I have. I've seen the racism light. I've got it. I see the agenda behind it. I've got it. And I think you know that it took me a little wind-up curve to come around. But I see it. You know, because I usually, like I said, I'm not going to be a feminist simply because I'm a woman. I'm not going to stand up for a black cause simply because I'm a black woman. I'm not going to stand up for a multicultural thing simply because I have two cultures in my bloodline. My whole thing is, what's right is right, what's progressive is progressive, what's BS is BS. And either way, awareness needs to come up. The other thing I want to point out is what you said. Propaganda is keep saying it until somebody believes it. Well, I believe that we have to keep saying it until somebody gets it. For those horses that are thirsty and refuse to drink, we have to keep showing them the brook. So it's like and I know you're on the same page with me on that. We have to keep promoting what is. We have to keep promoting the other side, the light. There are two panelists waiting. Let me bring them in. 1 second. Welcome to the show, Carl. You're on the air.
Good evening. This is Al Tariq calling in.
Hey, Al Tariq. All right, hang on a minute. There's someone behind you. You'll have the mic the first. Let me just bring them in, okay? Welcome to the show, Carl. You're on the air.
Yeah, what's up? This is Naj in Atlanta.
Hi, Naj in Atlanta. You'll have the mic up right after the panel's before you, okay?
All right.
Go ahead, Al Tariq.
Yeah, I was just liking what was being said, and it's just amazing how, you know, it's so hard for us to get together, you know, as far as coming together and really making moves overall. And I just really thank, you know, the Creator of God, having, you know, whatever denominational faith that you believe in, the one God, and it's just really something else how we don't pull together the way that we're supposed to in this dire days that we're in, with all these different things that's going on around us and with us, you know, and it's even funnier how, like what you said, and some things came up, KD, what you told me, and it's like unbelievable at times about what you say about people that all these keyboard punchers, you know, on the internet and stuff like that. And a lot of times I feel like, and there's some people that even got talk shows, and a lot of times it's like you'd be like, are they just doing this just for publicity? You know, and I mean, because the attitudes you come across even sometimes on there, and it's supposed to be about these certain sites. That's supposed to promote awareness and unity. It's a lot of passion going on, and this is with a lot of grown people. So it really taught me something spiritually over time, and is that how can, if the grown people are always at each other, let alone in the streets, because a lot of your feelings even come out on these social media sites. Themselves, Facebook and whatever other ones, you know, and it's like a lot of the grown-up people don't really get along. So I see why the young people catch all this hell, because a lot of us that's grown are crazy as hell, and we can't even get along. So how do we get them together to get them along? And I thank God for those of us who's pushing and doing that and working towards those areas. But I know it has to be hard as hell, because you got a lot of hard-headed, bull-headed people. And we all want to be cheap. And we don't want to listen. We don't want to play opposition. Want to be chiefs. No Indian, you know, no a little Indians doing a little footwork and things like that. It's like the unity part is so hard to come together. So I see why the kids have to be focused on, although that's the goal all the time anyway. But when you're selfish and you're greedy as being an adult and your ego's all in the way, these things, with these things in place, that's what make it that much more harder for us to get ahead. And the enemy will look at you like, look at them, they're so stupid. Look at how they do one another. I know they be on Facebook laughing. The people who monitor and stuff, I know they laugh. Oh, they're supposed to be trying to say they're getting something together, but look how they can't build anything. They're always tearing each other down, you know, and they have common problems. They're not trying to find a common solution. You got too many headstrong, so-called intellectuals and all these different types of people that's on there, and it's just a big bunch of mess, you know, and I just have to pray, you know, to have the right type of fortitude to be able to go beyond that and just pray for the people who are really putting in the footwork. You know, that's why I love brothers like, you know, Professor and Zeddy and those of you who I know are doing things. You know, I don't take nothing away from that, you know. And I just hope that those of us who are doing those things just continue on to do it, and the rest will be exposed for who they are.
Absolutely. Before I turn the mic over to you, Naj, I just want to touch on something that you said, Al-Tariq. Since I started this show, I have run into some outrageous scenarios. There's been times, and I don't shock easily, but there has been some things on social media that I've been sitting there going, is this guy or this woman truly in their 50s doing this garbage? And I'm going to give you one little example, and then Naj, you know, I'm going to give it to you. We got into a discussion. You know, everybody that knows me knows I'm a diehard Knicks fan, okay? And I'm also a diehard hater. I can't stand to eat. Okay, now, the Knicks and the Heat were like neck and neck pretty much. Everybody was, all right, they got this one. Oh, no, the Knicks got that one. Okay, now what happened was I got on there and I started, you know, doing a couple of jokes with regards to LeBron James, okay, because I think that, frankly, he tried to compare himself to Michael Jordan and, as good as he is, he's no Michael Jordan, okay? So the whole thing about this was, I said, yeah, and, you know, I don't know what it was that I said. Now, this group, and he is in his mid-50s, okay, got back on there, and this is what his reply was. Oh, now y'all are talking about this man. What has this guy done to you? He's done but perform and do his thing. But you know what? That's why all your houses be stinking and you girls are all fat and you're walking around. And I'm like, what? So I told him, and I said, first of all, this is all sports talk and sports trash fun. That's what people do. You get onto opposing teams, you get up there, and the whole fun about it is the competition of it. You're a fan of the opposing team, and we're all going to believe our team is going to make it, right? Okay, where did it turn down to a personal attack against black women and their stinking houses and that they're fat and sloppy and that's why black men don't want them? How did it get to that? And by the way, you're talking about what has LeBron ever done to us? What the hell has he done for us? Do you honestly think that just season ticket holding, he notices when he's on the court? Does he give a damn after he lost or won and will turn to you and go, thank you, sir, for your individual contribution to my VIP tickets? He does not. He doesn't know who you are, not even in those fundraising. So for you to be able to turn around and attack black women, you're an ignorant idiot. And in addition to that, when I replied to this person, I got unfriended. Say, look, Naj, welcome to the show, and what is your take on tonight's situation?
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah, I haven't been listening long, man, but great topics and good words from everybody, so I just want to add a little something. I guess the main thing that's hitting to me is what Kwame Ture told us, man. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have people who've studied these things, great people who've left their legacy, their words, their works, and we need to follow their blueprint. And his main thing was organize, organize, organize. That way, when you have poor sections of the community, once they organize, then they have some power when they start creating small businesses and voting together and understanding that there's strength in numbers. So I'm just really stuck on that doctrine of Kwame, of organize, 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 and that's the way that you fight against white supremacy or any other group that tries to, you know, attack you. And, like, getting into this thing as far as wealthy black people and what they do, the little comment by Donald Sterling, the wealthy black people we're talking about don't have the wealth to reach back. So for the most part, they're only going to dump their money into something that's secure. So if poor working people and just regular poor people actually figured out their different routes of getting together and organizing and building something, those people will contribute after them. But you got to understand, man, middle-class people are always kind of sketchy when it comes to, you know, donating their money or their time or anything like that because they don't feel like they want to squander it. So that's middle class of every race, every country. They're not going to lead anything. The poor always are the ones who lead the change. And I guess getting into how this Donald Sterling thing went down, all we saw was a real racist on TV, on display. The other billionaires threw him out the boat because they don't want people looking into their backgrounds. Because if you start looking at some of that ownership, you'll see other people have some real shady things. I would throw out Mickey Arison of the Miami Heat. If you actually look at his stuff, you'll find that it's a whole lot of money that was built on construction in Israel. And that's when you're talking about settlements and pushing people off their land and other things like that. So there's a lot of shaky stuff when you're talking about, you know, billionaires, man. Behind every fortune, there's a great crime. That's not just a saying, man. You can find that a lot of times. But I'm really encouraged by what I'm hearing tonight because these radio shows, man, regardless of what we think, they sit there. And someday, 2 years from now, some kid could turn on this station and listen to different things. And that's why I was glad you explained what you meant as far as talking about different things that the media does. And the brother gave a great perspective on it being propaganda. But if you're starting off at square one, you don't know that. But since y'all gave that whole breakdown, if somebody was just to listen to this show, you're kind of hipping them to something, man. A homeless dude taught me how to tie a tie. You can learn things from anybody, and you never know where it's going to come from. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So my main thing with black folk, man, just keep organizing, meet like-minded people, and try to build something, man. Everything you do is going to contribute and help a little more than what it was before. And when you meet these ignorant folks on Facebook and Twitter, they just giving you the notion, okay, he's not a conscious person. He's not really aware. He's been damaged by this system. I might not be able to save him, man. The great Frederick Douglass, man, it's easier to what did he say? Easier to educate children than it is to fix broken men and women. So,
right.
I mean, some of these folks are lost, man. And, you know, we can try to help them. And if they ever are ready for help, then we should be there to help them. But we can't waste our time trying to save people who are not interested in anything we're talking about or, you know, anything we're interested in. They think the system is fine.
Naj?
Yes, ma'am.
Drop the mic because you don't need to say a damn thing else. Absolutely. Let me explain this to you, okay? I just want to touch on one little thing from a little slight.
Okay.
Different aspect. I'm sorry, my mic got a little stuck. Okay? What I want to tell you is this. I agree with you that we can't focus on saving people who don't want to be saved. I alluded to the thirsty horse going to the water situation. What I'm saying, what we've been saying on this show is this. If those of us that know need to continue to do what we got to do, I believe we had, when we did the Lavenia Johnson petition tribute, the man that started the petition for Lavenia Johnson's justice said something. He said, I'm not going to waste my time to go out there if I'm mopping the floor okay, to try to teach somebody or pull somebody in to do it. I'm just going to do it. And there will be one person who notices how clean the floor is becoming and will pick up a broom or a mop to assist me. That's what I'm working for. That's what we have to work for. Listen, you're right, broken men and women, old dogs, new tricks, all of those things go to a certain point. But the other thing you mentioned, poor black people. We're the ones that do have the power. We just don't realize it. Why? Because we're being dumped with what we're facing. Every day we got to get up and make rock soup from a rock. Every day we have to figure out how we're going to take these pennies and make it to a dollar. Every day we have to figure out how we're going to battle the child support system, the family court system, the ACS system, the white supremacy, the white media, bringing down the black person. Every day we're faced with this on a minute-to-minute basis. So we don't have, we too scared to deal with that. However, when you get tired, you like a tamed animal that's cornered, we'll come out fighting. That's what people who are in this situation of understanding and knowledge need to be organized, like you said, and definitely determined to go through it even while they're shaking their heads. Middle-class people, you're right, will not. Rich people stay rich by clipping coupons. Poor people stay flashy by cash and carry mentality, by having ingenuity to do an entrepreneurship, but however, we try to do it from a hustling standpoint. And like you said, I don't know which one of you mentioned, the people monitoring the social media is cracking up, and you know what else they're doing? They're sitting there going, hey, look at these guys. Guess what? To the other people, yeah, we still got them. They ain't going nowhere.
And let me tell you, too, last time they thought they got us and we wasn't going nowhere and they had the Red Scare, they was chasing the communists all over this country, the whole civil rights movement jumped up on them. They didn't even see it coming. So
right.
As much as they've done to us and as much as they think we should be gone, look, there are people who are gone from this earth.
Really
as much as we've been through, we still here, man. So, I mean, the world changes every day, so you never know. And, you know,
and
we always got
nowhere.
A fighting chance. Yeah,
and we ain't
exactly.
going nowhere. We're not
Absolutely.
Going away. You know why? Maybe we won't be standing as pure blacks, but we're definitely mixing it up. So even if we, you know, all of those interracial couples, they're still black. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
You're still black. Because you might be a black Chinese or a black Puerto Rican or a black Russian, but they're still black in the blood. And guess what? You can't get rid of us. You can
right.
shoot
more
down
more
every black man that's out there. But if he has seated with somebody else, guess what? Here comes another one. We're still here. We come in all shades, hues, colors. We come in all aspects, all forms. We come in different formats. For those of you out there in the big old world that think that you know a little bit more about HTML code, guess what? We're coming back, too. We are avatars, we are straight up figurines, we are everything that you don't want us to be. The problem is we have to understand our rightful resourcefulness. We have to understand the regality that we have with each other.
Right.
We are a resourceful people. We are a diligent people. We are a people that can be bendable, flexible. We can adjust. Okay, we may not see it because it's in the form of survival. But we certainly are. We're the ones that taught them how to flavor their foods and nurse their babies while they were busy telling us we were no good. Yet and still, all of their slave masters needed to rape their slaves. So explain to us, if you're so disgusted by a people, why would you join liquids with them? Just a thought. I'm just saying.
Even still,
and
even
what I love hearing on this panel, if I've never said this before, that as much as I have stated my undying appreciation to you fellas, and now to you, Naj, because you've been added to the circle tonight, you fellas, Deacon, Salo,
yeah.
Professor Al-Tariq, Patrick when he's on, Hakeem when he's doing his thing, if I've never said this to you before, let me explain to you what else makes my appreciation for you that much more intense. You are guys. You are men. The very targets that instill fear and the illusion or the perception of power to those people trying so desperately to eradicate you because of their fears. And you are here every night speaking about it, uplifting women, uplifting our need to do something. You are God. You come in on women's issues. You come in on men's issues. You stand up and account for the things y'all could do better while you acknowledge the things that have been done to you. The few good men segments that I have done, it's not because I'm trying to get any type of rates, because every single one of you know I am not about ratings. I'm only at 24,000-something people, but guess what? I'll take that 24,586 quality people over 1,007,000 people that really are just in it for the controversy. I'm not trying to be a little fish in a big media pond, because I don't intend for our communities to be lost any further. So if I get the same five people every night making these wonderful discussions, then you know what? God has blessed me five damn times. That's my feeling on it. Because five quality, solid people will turn into 5,000 one day. And I don't have any doubt that all is not lost with our people. I think that once we finally get tired of being tired, we're going to get there. And we're still not going to save everybody. But at least some of those thirsty horses will go, wait a minute, what the hell is wrong with us? That's a brook. We're endless water. Drink. So, Naj, I thank you very much for you adding more power to this already powerful panel. Al-Tariq, I thank you consistently, because what you spoke about, which I believe is one of our newest, biggest things of destruction, is the social media. Mm-hmm. What I've noticed about you is every time you post in the midst of all that drama, you always post something. Did all of you remember the movie Harlem Nights, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All of you remember Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Arsenio Hall, the 40s or 50s setting. Okay. Do you remember the shooting scene when Arsenio Hall thought that Eddie Murphy killed his brother? And
yeah.
They went to that storefront and all of Arsenio's people had like these machine guns. And then that one guy came in with the little bullet and said, pop.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, with the AK-47. And this one guy, after all of that, just came out with a single shot.
Uh-huh.
Okay? That's what you do, Al-Tariq. You come out with that single shot in the midst of all the AK-47s. And every time you post something, it's a powerful post. Patrick, who's mm-hmm. not here tonight, who I adore, because he's another one that is continuously spreading awareness despite the garbage. Okay, we're continuously showing options that the world has tried to say doesn't exist for us. I thank him for that. He's another one that's that powerful single pop. Naj, people like you. Professor, oh please, what can I say about you? Okay, this man is in a gym right now, still trying to offer stuff. Deacon, I know what you do. You don't stop. Stalo, I know what you do, and you do it with the most important group of our entire community, the youth.
Amen.
For those of you on this panel who don't know, there have been several instances that I have called Stalo to speak about a show topic or to tell him that I want him to be a guest or to bring a guest or do something, and he would be right in the middle, on the phone with me, in the middle of stopping a deadly conflict between two of his teams. What are you doing, man? That's not the way to do it. And you don't have children of your own, yet you've been a male figure for these young boys.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so
God bless
to those of you who think women don't notice it, that we're all about cursing you out, no? Organization, absolutely, Naj, absolutely. Absolutely, because if we don't know what the hell we're dealing with, then we're going to keep looking at a whole explosive piece of mess. How are we going to even know which is the first piece we need to start to using to rebuild the rest of the mess?
Yeah, I agree 100, man. I'm over here in the Clarkston section, and there's a lot of Somalians and Ethiopians over here. And one thing I noticed was one guy, he was telling me about this thing they have called a susu. I know a lot of you have heard of it.
Oh, yeah.
Where, Yeah, every pay period they throw a little money to the side, and then, you know, every week somebody gets that big pot of money.
Right.
With them working together like that, they've kind of started to build their own little infrastructure around here. And, you know, to be honest, it's kind of embarrassing the fact that they're opening small businesses over here before, you know, most of the black people in Decatur are doing that. Yeah. Now, that's not a knock against black folk. That's just a thing of, okay, looking at this like, oh, we need to understand where our power is. It's with us, all of us, putting our stuff together.
Absolutely, and it doesn't cost much. It doesn't cost much. I always am baffled by the ability of our people who don't have a dime, who's on welfare, who is working some part-time job in some burger flipping joint somewhere, can find the money to be blinged out with a $1,500 chain, a $500 pair of sneakers, a $250 jersey. But we don't have $5 or $20 to put in a susu, like you said. You know, it kills me how we have the brains to be down in a metro station learning how to hustle 50 cents off of a swipe of a card that's going to lead you to jail should you happen to proposition an undercover cop looking to bust that very ring.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't take that same $2 you make off of that one thing and put it aside to start a little business from outside your car, to build up, to get an actual legitimate life.
Right.
So that you can now become a tax-paying person with some status in the community, with a voice, like you said, even voting together. And you know what else baffles me? That while we're allowing all these people to come into our neighborhoods and build up these stores, corner markets, Chinese food places, delis that won't let you shop in a store after 12 if it's not through a window, we're continuing to fund them with money we don't have.
Yeah.
We're the first ones that can't live without orange soup chicken. We're the first ones that will give the crown fried chicken, you know, I don't know, is that halal chicken? Our money, while they're busy in their language talking about how much of a screw-ups we are, how they're not allowed to come into their parties. We're the first ones funding Donald Sterling's of the world. Because, like I said in the segment about that, we'll come out, we'll go on social media with our kids right there to see what daddy or mommy just did. We just spent a whole 96 hours on Facebook beefing about this. We went outside and we got mad. And after we got mad, let's go to the game, son. Let's go down to the NBA store and let's go buy L.A. Clippers jerseys. Because we're mad at this man, but we're going to pay him to stay mad.
You know, Katie.
And why do we keep saying it? Because we have to keep letting them know. People really don't get it until they get it. Go ahead. I'm sorry, whoever was starting.
No, that's cool. It's cool, Kate. But it's like the brother was saying earlier, and this is why I always focus my messages to the youth. And this is why I go into high schools and community centers and so forth, is because there are too many people, specifically our generation and older, who are broken to the point where this current situation, this world that we live in, is perfectly normal to them. It's so normal that they fear change, that they fear stepping out there and making a difference, even though the community is collapsing around them. So it's important that we continue to recognize this, because it's very easy for somebody to get burnt out trying to propel this message to people who are constantly saying, you know what, I'm all right where I'm at. I don't want to be bothered. You know, we have to get to the point, too, where we say, okay, cool. It's fine, brother and sister. If you decide to join us later on, then we'll sit down and talk then. But right now, we need to take this message. We need to take this thought process to people where we can start actualizing it and start actualizing it within groups. So that's why, you know, like I said, my focus is on you. And I'm just so proud today, because I finally convinced my alma mater, Simon Gratz High School here in Philadelphia, to allow me to come in and speak to the students who will be graduating or moving on, but basically students within my neighborhood that have seen me and has been asking and requesting for me to come through, to come talk to them about the very things we're talking about tonight. So like I said, and like you said earlier to the brother that was speaking, I was checking it back because I was just sitting back listening so well. And I said, I don't even think I need to talk the rest of the night because, you know, between Alton Reed, between, huh?
I said, yes, yeah,
no, but the thing is, when you hear it, you don't need to hear it twice. You know, we don't need to keep, you know, and I'm thankful that, you know, this panel is not built on people who love to speak just for the sake of listening to their own voices, and that we share information, and that we're growing, and that we take this information and we continue to spread it amongst our own and still bring more things back to the table. You know, I leave with just as much, if not more, than I bring to the table every single segment. So, and I take my hats off to all of you because this outlet is needed. And believe it or not, Katie, and it seems like every week or so, you're getting more and more people call into the show for the first time. So you get more first-time callers calling in. So you must be doing something right here, too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I didn't even think about that. Now, see, you done made me all blushy now. Yeah, and called in now, and now they didn't bring that point up. Let me tell you another reason why I appreciate you, gentlemen, because you are our community leaders. You are the household leaders. You are the men in the village. You are the power of structure. You are. You guys. And I know my ladies are going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't care what your independent woman thing says. I'm an independent woman. I can be one. I can do things all by myself. But do I want to? If there's a powerful brother doing his job? Absolutely not. I'm a single mother. Those of you that don't know, I had 11 children. One passed away, 10 are living. I'm raising 6 of them, all by my widowly self. And let me tell you something. As much as I can do it, and I do it on a daily basis, no way in hell if their father or a father figure was in place doing his job and giving my sons both sides of the fence, giving my daughters both sides of the fence, that I'm not going to welcome it. There's no way I'm going to interfere with that part because there's just certain things men can get done in their way that a woman couldn't touch. And vice versa, gentlemen, those of you banging on your chest. So you men are the future. You men are the leaders now. You men are the powerful voice of the future men who are going to lead. You guys are. And like I said, if it's only 5 of you every week, I'm happy.
But you know, I'm pretty sure there's more than just us men that are here that are chiming in with this broadcast every evening. And some of them are just sitting back and not willing to step it up. Well, it's long overdue, gentlemen, to step this thing up, because the way society is looking right now, there's very much a great need for men like us to start forming together and start uniting with each other and start saving our young people, because that's our most powerful resource that we have is our young people. So we need to start focusing on that, because I'm here in Toledo, Ohio, and I lay in my bed at night and I hear all these gun pops going off. And I wake up the next day, and there's some young people that I know that have lost their lives. There's something that needs to be done, because they have funerals almost every day, and they come to these funerals and they boo-hoo. But why are you crying now when you didn't do something to try and save these young people when they were living?
Absolutely. My dad always says, give me flowers while I can smell them. And panelists, I see you there. I'm going to bring you in just a second. I also want to add to this, the little things that we can do, and I know, Professor, you and I, we've spoken about that, Stalo, Al-Tariq, you guys know what I mean about using what you have and stop trying to storm the mountain that doesn't belong to you. Now, one of the things, since tonight's topic is about the black athlete's power over our youth and the way that their outside forces are using them as our weapon of mass destruction. Here's my deal, okay? one of the small things that can be the most significant thing you could ever do for your youth is to do use the games as a teaching force. Number one, if you a brother taking a young brother to a game and you see this garbage coming out on the air, this is a time for you just to not only double up and unify with the enjoyment of the sport, but to say, listen, you see what that guy just did? Now, he's all big and bad. That's not the example that you want to follow, son.
Right.
Okay? This is how you break that force of white mass media using black success stories to lead our children into not success. That's what you do. Right. It's those little things. You stop looking at what you don't have and maximize the hell out of what you do have right in the palm of your hands. Get the hell off the NIMBY disease. For those of you that don't know, NIMBY means not in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Because your backyard affects the community yard, and that's the problem. If your kid grows out, comes out of a home that's broken, that has an effeminized male, if a male at all, and they're angry and they don't know what's going on, and then you live right next door with your two-parent household and your well-grounded sons, and you're teaching your sons to stay away from that kid instead of trying to reach out past this teenager's anger and find out what the pain is and seeing what you could do about it. What the hell are you good for?
Mm.
And what makes you think your protected backyard is not now going to be attacked by this kid who's hurt with jealousy because he doesn't have what your kids have? Not the materialistic aspect, but the love aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring our panelists in and let's see what they have to say for the evening. Thank you for waiting. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Yo, what's up? This is Nod. I got dropped on my other phone, so I had to call in through the cell.
Oh, okay. You're welcome on either side. That's cool. Honestly, like I said, Nod, I hope you heard. I appreciate all of you leaders on this panel tonight. Patrick, if you're listening anywhere, miss you on the panel tonight, dude, but thank you also. And all of the brothers that I see on the pre-broadcast topic discussion, these guys are speaking such knowledge. The knowledge does not have to stay on Facebook or Instagram.
Exactly.
It doesn't need to come through Pinterest alone. You know, we speak from the Bible where it says faith without works is dead. We can't just keep speaking knowledge and not doing a damn thing to actually preach it and walk it.
Right.
Talk is cheap. I see many of these fellas out there on these social medias, on these 96-hour exchanges, ego bashing. It goes from, yes, but, you know, we need to stand up as brothers. What do you mean? That's stupid. I'll come to where you live and I'll kick your ass. Really, dude?
What? So, And you know, the funny thing is, I just want to add that with the Facebook and with everything else, you know, a lot of people confused. Like, it's funny, like, a lot of people say, oh, they do this on Facebook, but they like this behind the scenes. Facebook is behind the scenes, and what you do in real life is what really matters. Like, I think people got to re-recognize the fact that that's not even, you know, just let the Facebook or whatever reflect what you really do and just, let it reflect what you do. But focus on real life, because if people get obsessed with the Facebook, that's the worst. That's dead work anyway. You know, use it as the entertainment tool. It is entertainment. But, you know, I see a whole bunch of the bashing y'all talking about, the filthy language to each other, the disunity. And somebody mentioned earlier, some people, I think, you know, that goes to show. Now, that's what's been most shocking to me, the different types of our own people that I've come across as I've gotten older has shocked me. You know, the works of white people don't really shock me. I remember being a child and then, you know, saying racist things and they were shocking me then, and I was grown. But now what our own people do is most shocking, right? So yeah, maybe it's some people, but at the end of the day, if you just are trying to, you know, if we just focus on the knowledge, you know, it'll fall on deaf ears for some people, but it'll fall on good ears for most, you know, I think, hopefully. But if not, let that be the shock, because that's what's been, you know, because it's good. We've been surprised, shocked. We've been in denial. We've gone through so many rites of passage, you know what I mean,
right,
with this. And we just need to keep pressing on, pushing forward.
With one thing you said, just slightly. I don't think we should be normalized with hearing racism every day. I think we continue to be pissed off about it because it's not something we're supposed to lay back and accept that that's just the way it is. We need to make it known that we're not standing for it. Because just because somebody, listen, we can't stop a person's feelings. Like somebody brought up the other day, well, what, we can't stop racism. They could say all they want, but he's still going to be that way. Nobody's looking to change his mind. But we're looking to tell him that whatever the hell is in your mind needs to stay right the hell there.
Right. Yeah, it's not going to be tolerated.
Okay? We need to say that to our children. We need to let them know that even if they have to play the game and save their life from a racist police gun, By pretending that they're submissive. When that's over, you better go find the next person in line. You can report this to. Or give it to your parents and let them find it. We need to do that. We need to make noise in the right way. I don't think that it went, like you said, you were shocked by it when you were younger. I bet you your eyes were wide, you were shocked, you were hurt. You gasped probably, oh my God, did you hear what they said? And now we're going, there we go again. Hell no.
No. It's like now it's like I see what you can do about it. You know, as a child, it's funny. I wish somebody had fortified me, right? Legally, especially, and everything else. Because I think back to instance of black males, Southeast Washington, D.C. It's a real life that many of the children that I tend to every day, they live this life. And this life they live in. You know, if they're fortified, they could do something. I see now. I even feel shocked, but I see what can be done. But I feel like I also, you know, see how many obstacles they put in the way for you to really do something. You know, but yeah, as a child, you don't even see. They don't even show you the real avenues to what can be done. You know, as these situations are happening, you going off, but they calling the police. You know, it's so much stuff that happens day-to-day life. Nobody knows about it. Individually we go through it, and the immediate people around us go through it. And then, you know, it's crazy. Like, and that's what I think, you know, and that's why I want to teach the children so badly, because I know what they've been through.
I am tired of having to teach my 4-year-old child no longer is a policeman somebody you can trust if you lost from mommy or dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick and tired of having to tell my child who's 16 and now he done got tall and he's even got speech fuzz on his face and he looks big and muscular that, okay, now, if you should get victimized, make sure when you see a police officer, you got your hands out to the side, your fingers spread. Don't assume the position. I'm sick of that. I'm sick of that garbage. I'm sick of my children at 6 and 7 having to ask me what the hell does a nigger mean. I'm tired of that. I'm sick and tired of them telling me at 6 years old that they got a girlfriend they got to go get. Are you kidding me? This is what the hell you see it because Family Guy, a cartoon? Is showing a kid trying to kill his mother, a dumb dimwit father who could be a closet gay, a confused son who don't know what he wants to do with himself, and a daughter who gets pushed around, pinned around, and everything else, and this is a normal family because the wife is sitting up there enjoying all of it and trying to keep her family together because that's the way they're promoting that. You see, even the dysfunctional family in the white world has wealth.
Yeah, but you know what, Katie?
Mm-hmm.
You made some points on some of the things that you're tired of and you're sick of, and right now at this state and time right now, I'm sick of the Michael Sam situation right now because okay, everybody knows he's gay now. Okay, all right, let's put it to bed. Let's leave it alone. I'm tired of turning on my TV and you got Michael Sam. Now they're talking about doing a documentary with Oprah Winfrey. So what, the man is gay. Okay, that's his business. Okay, now, you're giving him all this publicity. This man haven't even stepped on an NFL football field yet to prove himself on the field. Let him play some football. That's what he's supposed to do. And don't push in my face your gay lifestyle on television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a lot of young people that were sitting and watching that, that are at the age to where they're impressionable, and they're getting the impression that it's okay, and it's not okay for that lifestyle. I'm not bashing any gay people. Like I said, I have gay family members in my family, but you're not going to flaunt your gay lifestyle in my face. You know, that's what you want to do. Okay, you do that.
Right.
But don't try to force feed me something that I don't agree with. First of all, the word says it's not right, so that's what I'm going along with. You know, and what another thing that gets on my nerves is that people want to compare gay rights to civil rights and want to compare that to what the black man has been going through and is still going through today. There's no comparison, so cut it out. It sickens
me. And it's
me.
Affecting children.
Absolutely
it's really, really
not.
Affecting
you're
kids.
Absolutely yeah. Not. And I believe we had a previous panelist, Renee, who brought up that like the gay discrimination is like the new blanket cover. Everybody's not going to say that, and they're going to allude to protecting the gay rights because they're afraid of having violated gay rights. Now, my personal viewpoint on homosexuality aside, I think everybody is entitled to live. I don't have a right to judge. But I have the same rule of thumb for homosexuality or heterosexuality. When it comes down to what is allowed for children, what is the public's business, what needs to be said or not. Like you said, let's speak Michael Sam. He hasn't even proven his damn self as a player. So why do I need to know about a part of your life that does not affect your performance one way or the other in the sport?
Yeah.
Okay? Why do I need
right.
to know? Okay? Number
yeah.
one. But I would say the same damn thing about a guy who, a sports athlete that likes to get drunk and screw six women at the same time or get anal sex or do whatever with a bunch of guys. I don't care. I come to play football. My children come to see you do your thing on the field or on the court. I don't need to know what happens after you sign autographs and get in your limo. Okay?
Yeah,
if you were trying to sexually harass me as a male or as a lesbian, you're going to get press charges either way. I don't give a damn
right.
about what you do outside of the field. I don't care. Unless you are coming after a child, an elderly person, the society on a whole. And, like, you know why Michael Sam was allowed to get escalated to big grand Oprah? Because he's black and he's gay and he came out. And guess what? They don't mind continuing to display some shame in us, something for people to talk about in their tennis club bars. The same ones that very guy who just made this big grand movement for the sake of all others will never be allowed to get into.
Can I get in on that real quick? There's an article on ESPN.com right now by a writer who I can't stand, usually, Jason Whitlock. But he gave really good insight on this Michael Sam situation because he approached it from the perspective of, if you had this show set up and you got your agents who are signing on to be producers on your show with Oprah, that wasn't some kind of moment you had at the draft. That was a pre-produced, publicity stunt. You set that up to do that. And
so
to see this guy, he's sharecropping. Basically, he's sharecropping on the gay media plantation. They're using this guy to get certain things
right.
out there into the public. I'm not against gay people. Live your life, whatever. But at the same time, I can call BS when I see it, and I see
right.
what they're doing with him. And he's going to the St. Louis Rams. That's probably the best D-line in football. So more than likely, he ain't even going to make the team. And they're doing a reality show about his life. So this is like you're cashing out. That's what y'all doing. Y'all making money off of this dude and using him, to advance
his
thing.
He pre-staged that kiss, too. That wasn't no heat-of-the-moment nothing. He pre-staged that kiss, too. Because if you guys took a look at that video, look at how, first of all, aggressively intense he was. He looked at the camera a real quick second to do it again. That wasn't an instant reaction. I get it. But you know what? What for? What did it get you? And why he's doing all these reality shows? Because he probably is setting up his backup plan when he doesn't make it in the Rams. All right? Here's another thing. You brought up a writer you don't like, but he made a good point. Let me tell you about a sportscaster who reported on that situation, who I swear to whatever's holy to me, that this guy appears to have been paid by the coons of the century, because he sat up there and answered questions such as this in this manner. Do you think that after Michael Sam came out and this kiss happened the way that it did, that he's going to get some flack from the team, perhaps? No, I don't really think so. You know who that dumb idiot was? Dante Salisbury. Oh, no, I've been there before, and I really don't think. I think people are a lot more sensible to the situation. Really, dude? Did you read the tweets that came out by his co-workers right after the kiss? Oh, my God, abominable. This is just crazy. Shaking my head. Oh, yeah, they're really going to be acceptable to him. You idiot.
That's crazy. And, you know, you even had to think about the children, and it made me realize what's happening to. You know, we got to give them some type of sexual structure, some type of social structure, and they're not getting it from the TV that they got, because it made me realize sexual frustration is tied to aggression at times, and we have a lot of aggressive teens that are aggressive towards each other, and it's really, really crazy. Sometimes it's real crazy.
Sometimes it don't make no sense. Internship demand. How about we start that? How about we start leaning on this
demand.
Media? FCC and all these things to say that some things are just not freaking necessary, even with the modern-day uncensored, uncut and raw and all the scrap versions of things. Why do we need to see any of those players' personal sexual preference? Listen, if he had tapped, kissed his lover on the mouth and hugged up, it probably still would have been a shock value, but I could understand that being an instant reaction. Okay, I can understand that. Whoa, I got this. Whoa, kisses, lover, hug him real quick, turn, jump up and down, do the Cuba Gooding, Jerry Maguire thing. I get it. But this guy didn't do that. He didn't do that. He did this like he was an actor in a play that was practicing his lines and delivered the final cut. That's what he did.
Yeah, Katie,
it had to be
scripted, really, when you think about it, because a lot of people didn't make it. He's in pretty much exceptional talent. It's not like he's just all this great coming off and all that stuff, but you got the cake already ready and all that. It's people who didn't even get called.
Yeah.
In a case like that, he really didn't have to get called, but you got the cake and everything ready, you already knew. They already knew where he was going.
Yeah.
The cake, though.
Yeah. One life. Yeah, I agree. Jim Jeffcoat's son didn't get drafted. He was Big 12 player of the year. Like, that seventh round, I mean, that's all guys who are basically free agents. You're going into camp to win a job. You're not necessarily in the NFL when you're
right.
drafted in the seventh round. So, I mean, like I said, that D-line he's going to, he's going to have a hard time making that team.
Anyway. Yeah.
Totally agree with all of you. You made some absolutely awesome points. I do. And like I said, like, you know, I'm sorry, guys. I got clumsy and dropped something. I'm sorry about that. But what I will say is that, like I said, once again, I cannot extend my appreciation and awe of you guys. You guys are our leaders. You guys are the power force. You guys are that big, let me say, the enforcers of certain things. Like I said, despite the emergence of the independent female and not bringing down the importance of a single mom's work that has been done to this point, what I'm saying to you is, I hear you guys come on every day and say the same thing. I hear you guys repeatedly point out the things that is wrong about yourselves or needs to be addressed. I hear you acknowledge what other people have done as well, but still speak about it on a unified situation. We do have to start getting to the point of stop. First of all, if you're too scared to make a change, then don't undo a damn positive change. That's my motto. If somebody comes to you and you don't want to look, they come to your door and you turn them away and they said, hey, listen, I'm about to go across the street to that empty lot right now and I'm bored up the property, so I'm going to go build a homeschooling instruction place so that we could take our children out of these prejudiced, condescending and definitely not for our children's benefit school system. And we got certified instructors that's going to do it. It's going to be right across the street from your neighborhood. You know, send your children there. They're like, no way. Uh-uh, not me. I'm not going to do that. So you know what you do? All right, thank you very much. But just to let you know, if you ever decide to do it, the school's right across the street. Then you build that school anyway. And then you start appealing to the one or two people that do want to welcome the notion and support the gesture, okay? And when that person, who probably going to be peeking out of their windows on a daily basis, trying to figure out what's going on, starts to see that it's starting to build and it's really successful, they're going to get curious. And when they start asking the person that actually took the chance and did it, now they want to get on the bandwagon. So you know what? That effort to do it anyway, to take the risk, was worth it.
Yeah, that, I agree. And with education, the biggest thing I try to push out there is look to the great brother, rest in peace to him, Dr. Amos Wilson. He is way too underrated, but he passed not too long ago, a few years back. But, I mean, he's on YouTube where you can find his lectures. And the big thing he emphasizes to regular, especially black people, is education is what solves your problems. So if you're not educated to solve your problems, you're not really educated. A great example he gives is, if I sent two teachers to the Amazon rainforest to talk to the tribes, and one of them had the works of Shakespeare and the other one had a book on irrigation, after a semester of teaching, the people who knew how to irrigate their land and get their crops in, they learned something useful that could change their lives. The people who learn Shakespeare are walking around talking good but don't really know anything. So education is to solve your problems. So we got all these middle-class and upper-class blacks, and by no means am I knocking them, but they're educated to solve the problems of mainstream America, how to fix finance companies, how to fix, you know, different city work, different things like that, engineering, things like that. They don't go to get educated how to fix problems in the black community, so later on when we ask them to help, they don't have the answers because that's not the education that they receive. So when you're poor and you're black in America or any other country, you should be trying to get an education to fix your problems, not the problems of other people.
Hey, Nash, is
you know, speaking on education, I know that that my grandson is up late listening in, and I want to send out my congratulations to him. He passed his ACT test. He needed a 400, and he passed with a 425. So I'd like to send out congratulations to him and let him know I'm proud of him.
All right, I need to speak with you after the show. The one that was speaking before you, was that you, Nash?
Yeah, and
yes.
By no means am I trying to notch that accomplishment. That accomplishment that brother just said, man, commend him on that.
Yeah.
No, I was asking, was it you that was speaking just before the deacon mentioned that little announcement?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Didn't I tell you that you could just drop the mic because you didn't say it all?
Hell no. Let the brother keep talking.
You picked it up again and then said another one. Drop the mic, dude. You're like right on point. You are on point.
No. He needs to keep talking.
You know, I want to start what you said because let me tell you what the hell I've been hearing. Now, as true as this is, why does everybody seem to put the cart before the horse in their responses? Okay, I get a lot of people that tell me this. The only way we're going to get somewhere is to get with economics. Economics is the key. Yes, fool, but if you don't have education, you won't understand economics. If you don't have it, everybody says, oh, yeah, you got to know your numbers. You've got to do this. Hey, when a kid is first born, they get past the crawling stage. Now you're teaching them their ABCs. Because before you could understand what 1 + 1 = 2 means, somebody needs to ask you what the hell your name is.
Right.
So I would love to see a kid go, what's your name? 4 + 4 = 8, and that's a double.
Yeah.
I'd love to see how that works.
I'm just a different voice, though. Y'all all know each other, so y'all have heard some of your ideas, and so I'm just a different person. So that's the only difference here when we're talking right now is that I'm just somebody different. But I'm just trying to stress that thing. Like I said, I'm not trying to knock education. Of course, we need education, of course. But we also have to understand that we have to solve our own problems, and those are going to be, you know, found outside of the box. Like, say, you go for finance and you learn to be a hedge fund guy and you work on Wall Street. You have no idea how to come back to a hood and say, how do we revitalize this community? Because you didn't get that type of education. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's,
no
so way. It's things we have to learn to make power.
Education is not just academics. What did you just say earlier, that a homeless man taught you how to tie your tie? Education is not just is not just what's in a damn classroom. Because before you reach the classroom, you are educated in other things. So it's not just what some certified teacher who needed their own education to get that certification is teaching you. What have you learned about logical thinking? What have you learned about critical thinking? What have you learned about humanity, emotion, respect? You can learn that as early as a toddler, because if a toddler goes over there to smack another kid to steal their toy, what's their parents going to say? No, no, don't do that. Time out or get their butt beat.
Well, you know what, too, Katie?
Uh-huh.
You know what, too, is that we can't always – we have to make sure that we don't place labels on who is our teachers and who's our educators, because you can learn from anyone, and you never know when that teachable moment is going to take place in your life that's going to change the course of your life and put you in the direction to not only do better for yourself, but to become that inspiration, or to become that vehicle that others can use to bridge from where they are to where they need to be, and learn how to work within the community. You know, it's ironic, you know, that we're having this discussion, because I just met with a brother at Black and Nobel. I knew this brother for a while, but his brother Levi at Black and Nobel, he does Sunday classes and so forth. And he was just telling me, he said, man, I'm glad you came into the store, because I need to talk to you. So this brother has gardens and the northern parts of the city and the western parts of the city. And he was talking about, listen, I need for you to help me get more people involved in this thing where we can start growing and preparing our own food. And I'm saying, listen, brother, not only am I going to be involved, but you're going to be my teacher. And not only are you going to be my teacher, I'm going to bring students out there so that you can teach them how to cultivate the land. And see, that's part of what we need to start doing. You know, we need to start looking into how can we get hands-on in our own reclamation project, where we are creating our own situations outside of the guys and outside of the structural situations that we've been dealing with that are designed for us to continue to enrich them while we grow poor every day.
And those are skills that we lost, because think about our great-grandparents who had 15 to a house and 17 to a house, who didn't depend on the grocery store. They grew a lot of food and ate a lot of beans to get by. Now, we've lost those skills, you know, just because the way technology is, everybody goes to the grocery store. But, yeah, that's what you're talking about right there. Yeah, that's very important. We definitely need those skills again.
I don't know why I'm not hearing Mike's drop. why I'm not hearing the mic drop? You guys are, my God. I mean, listen, nobody wants to talk about that, but everybody sees it. Nobody wants to address it, but everybody suffers from it. Nobody wants to say the big supremacy word, but we're victimized of it. Or victimized by it. Let me say that correctly for those of you out there that's technically correct.
Yeah,
okay?
Well, you know,
nobody wants to talk about it. Go ahead, Professor.
You know, Katie, you know, the irony is, and it's funny, my nephew, I was at the gym with my nephew who's in college right now over in western Pennsylvania. But it was ironic, because thinking about how when I drove to go pick him up from school over the winter break, I had to drive to all of these different towns. Now, you guys all remember the Christmas commercials that were coming out with Visa. I don't know if it was Visa or if it was American Express, one of those credit cards talking about how they helped revitalize the middle class communities with group economic principles and things of that nature. Yeah, I saw this all over southern and central Pennsylvania, in which you don't understand. Once you step outside of Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania becomes Pennsylvania. So everything in Pennsylvania turns white after you leave the city of Philadelphia. And these communities, you don't see a Walmart, you don't see a major supermarket chain, you don't see mega malls or restaurant chains. What you see is individual owners and everybody in those towns work and support each other in those towns.
Right.
They don't. There's no Walmart, and it brings to mind about some of the things that we need to understand, because they're taking Dr. Claude Anderson's philosophy of group economics, and they're applying it to their communities. We'll look and watch a lecture, and we'll read the books that Dr. Claude, not many of us are going to read the books, but we'll watch the lectures that Dr. Claude gives us on group economics, but we won't lift a finger to create the same situations in our communities. And
right.
It comes back to what the brother was saying earlier. We are dealing with some broken people. I know people who are business owners, and they know two, and I brought the story up before. The two black business owners across the street from one another, they're beefing. Meanwhile, nobody is paying attention to all the money the Chinese store is getting. Nobody's paying attention to any of the money that Dominican store is getting, and the Dominican store unplugs the refrigerators at night so you can soil and spoil food in those places. And yet and still, these brothers are calling L&I on one another instead of addressing the situation, instead of organizing. No matter how many conversations I've had with them, instead of organizing and working together and monopolizing that area for the tour.
You know what? You know what? There's a couple of other spins on that. Like you said, they're not watching that the money is going over there. But you know why? Those other ones are getting there. Let's look at their economic strategies. Chinese people know we like a lot of stuff for cheap. What do? Pack on all that fried rice, all of that chicken, fried chicken. When they even ask you, ketchup hustle, you know that? Okay. Right? You'll get all of that for a good old $3.99. Now go over to the Dominican bodegas. They will smile in your face, oh, yes, come in, do whatever, and overcharge you for something that you could go to the supermarket and get for $3 less with a bigger size on it. And they'll know to open a bodega right in the center of the only location you can find the store within a three-mile radius. Meanwhile, here's what's wrong with the black community, black-owned business. A, we're too scared to go shop for ourselves or too uninterested. And then those of us that have the guts to open up a black-owned business overcharge our own people.
Well, you know, that's a show in itself. And to talk about that. And,
absolutely.
You know, I didn't mean to bring something up to take us anywhere else task, but you know, I do understand that the tax laws, too, that are created to create those conditions. But, you know, the funny part about what you just said is, you know, I've never seen garbage outside of either one of those locations during trash day.
No, they're in the back. They're in the back. And when they run out of it, that's probably where they go to get it. Funny, I haven't seen any mice in them dirty, dusty places either.
Right.
I haven't seen any mice in those dusty places either. You ever see what the average Chinese restaurant looks like? Okay,
yeah.
Wouldn't that be like a heaven for rodents?
Well, I'm sort of lost words there, but you know,
oh my God,
the irony. Yeah, well, the irony about how we need to do things in our community is we need to start with the youth. And a lot of elders get upset with me when I say, you guys dropped the ball, we dropped the ball. And people get offended by that. And I don't say
they
it for people to get offended.
They must have been mad at us then because we say it often. We say it consistently.
Well, I don't say it for them to get offended. I say it for them to say, okay, let's acknowledge it so that our community can move past it. You know, let's acknowledge the fact that, you know, we were making progress with the especially when the civil rights movement transformed into the Black Power movement and so forth. We were making progress as a community. And when we got attacked with full spectrum dominance of it all, with the first of all, middle income jobs and so forth, middle wages or the creation of Black middle classes through titles, positions like teachers and getting positions and factories and things of that nature. And also from the street level with the influence of narcotics in our community, which tore down family structures. There were a lot of people who were either on one side or the other of that boat that decided the system of white supremacy was no longer a threat, that we had gained enough during that time. And it was during that time that the system of white supremacy regrouped itself. And Ronald Reagan started coming out with things like the welfare mob and all these different systems to set up to regain and retake all the things. Agenda 21 meetings taking place off the shores of what is it, Buenos Aires, if I'm not mistaken. So, and I know I took us on a little tangent there, but the thing is, we did not prepare for their comeback. And, you know, just like the Star Wars movie, The Empire Strikes Back, well, they struck back. And we're still waiting for the return of the Jedi. So we, you know, right now we're trying to birth some young Jedi so that we can take on the Empire. And the young Jedi I keep maintaining that needs to be our focus because they still have that revolutionary fighting spirit of our ancestors, and they're not scared. The problem is, they have no direction, so they're killing one another. And when they do stand up to white supremacists, they're getting shot and killed in the streets, and we're not making anybody pay for it with our economic prowess.
Absolutely. And then they tell you to drop the damn mic, my God. Okay, listen. Listen very carefully. There's something you touched on a little bit earlier. And, Lord, I'm all shocked by what you said. Lord, what did you say? Now you see, you done got me all mixed up. This is what I wanted to say. When you said that when you say to the adult that they drop the ball, that they get offended, that's another one of our problems. Instead of you looking at it as an attack, why are you not looking at it as a form of knowledge and self-reflection, as a form of self-examination, as a form of looking at our problems from a different angle? I speak often on the analogy of you driving in the same direction, trying to get to a spot, and you are just so dead set on believing that the route you know is the way to go, but yet you keep winding up in a place you don't belong. And it's time for you now to turn left instead of right. Why are we not stopped? You know, why are we not preventing ourselves from becoming offended when somebody points something out, okay, and starts saying, you know what do you mean by that? And then allowing a person to say what they mean so that they don't take it as a personal ego attack, that they take it as an overall community problem that needs to be addressed and solved, okay? But like I said, we love the cash and carry mentality, yet we have limited cash.
Mm-hmm.
While rich people who got it all will stand in line and hold you the hell up in the supermarket with one item that they're not only clipping 8 coupons for, but they're also paying with their pennies they got out their piggy bank. Then you find out they own a Lexus, a Mercedes, a penthouse, they have a summer house, and they can go to the Poconos every damn winter. We're too proud. I paid all this for that.
I was just gonna say that wealth disparity is real, and like you said, we have to be accountable for how much we haven't done in these last 40 years. But a good chunk of that is based on people thinking the fight is over, as he said, thinking everything is equal. If you just do what you're supposed to do, everything will work out. And in all reality, we're the only ones playing the game fairly. We're the only ones saying, okay, everybody can get in, you can do this, you can do that, and everybody else is using group economics and group dynamics against us.
Absolutely.
And we have to decide that, you know, we're going to look out for each other. So that Chinese store that's in your neighborhood that you don't like, or Korean store, it's not because you hate Koreans, you just defund them. You stop shopping there. Not because you're against them, it's because they won't allow you to open a store in their neighborhood. So, and we all know this. We all know this is basic, but it's hard to get across to other people. But if you can get just enough to stop going over there, you can really change things. And then when those buildings come up for sale, people put their money together, and, you know, we can start to build our own. So that way we're not just giving the young folks a speech. We're actually giving them jobs and something that they can, you know, build on.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the other issue. Those young, hungry kids we're talking about, we got to give them substance. We can't just talk to them. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm with you on that 100, man. And
I
bookstore you named, I've seen speeches there. I've seen people speaking at that bookstore, Brown and Noble, Black and Noble, something like that.
Black and Noble?
Seen, yeah, yeah. I've seen a little
you might have seen me once or twice, brother.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I have a series there, What About Us series, on the Trayvon Martin incident. A little bit back, and I deal with them a lot. There's some good brothers over there, Hakeem and Tyson. There's some good brothers over there, and you know, it's a cultural mecca for the community, and it's just too bad that a lot of people in the community don't recognize it as for what it is. You know, it's our beacon here in Philadelphia, and one of the things I would like for them to do is, you know, and I would like for them to do more outreach and so forth, but it's really strenuous because it's hard to do the outreach when the economics isn't matching up. So, you know, you have to be in several different places, but the brothers there are working hard, and they do a lot of things to make sure that the store is open and is open to everybody. And, in fact, they have something coming up in a few weeks. They have a debate coming up. They're doing debates there now, but I'm more interested in going to the classes and linking up with brothers and working within the city. We have some other groups down here that are working on teaching young brothers how to become entrepreneurs by spreading their messages of avoiding violence and it's really deep because these are some of the neighborhoods that you would say, wow, I don't want to walk through that neighborhood in the daytime, let alone nighttime. And these brothers are out there saying, listen, they're stepping to the cats that want to be thugs and this, that, and the other, and they're saying, listen, you brothers are not going to do all that on this block. You're not going to sell drugs out here. You're not going to kill our children out here and so forth. We want you to change the way you live, and we're offering you that alternative to be entrepreneur, and we want to teach you how to take those skills, those marketing skills you use to sell your drugs, to sell something else, be it whatever. Maybe you want to have a message on a shirt. Maybe you want to promote a positive message on a CD, something other than what you're doing out here on the streets with the drugs. And a lot of those brothers, these brothers, their numbers are multiplying because people are tired of this. I guess people are we're just tired as a community of the despair, of the violence, of going to funerals. I know I am. So
yes,
when
okay,
yeah,
Professor, I'm sorry, honey, I gotta cut you short because the last 12 minutes of this show is going to be dedicated to not even if you have something in progress. Definitely, I have to bring out the announcements of the show in our efforts and towards solution and conflict resolution among our Black community. You guys have heard me. Those of you that are veterans, and Naj, this will probably be your first time hearing it. We are in the process of becoming an LLC. What we're trying to do is, on the Edge Show, is going to be the mother company. We have four sub companies in progress of different entrepreneurs, where together as this incorporated LLC, we're going to be offering internships immediately to our Black scholars that are coming out and have nowhere to go. We're going to be offering down the line, as we work on getting funding and sponsorships and things to that effect, on becoming a first company that allows us one part-time and one full-time position to a single mother who cannot obtain child care to go to a standard commute job. So we're going to be offering a legitimate work-from-home position for our company. We are looking for quite a few things we have in line right now. Looking for sponsorships to make that happen. As it stands, we were in the process looking for a venue for our first anniversary show to help as a fundraiser for this. So that is finally starting to happen. I need every one of you who are impressed with this show to do a few things. One, you have to like our social media pages so that our investors know you guys are out there listening. You definitely need to make a comment somewhere to let them know. If any of you are interested in helping this mission happen, write a listener's review letter so that we can submit that with our business proposal to these investors or any individual sponsors that want to help along. We have mugs and we have pens with the show's logo on it that we are using towards fundraising as well. These are the things that we need. And most importantly, spread the word to somebody who one of these topics may affect or may benefit from. We are definitely trying to make sure that it all goes back into our community, that our youth are empowered, are and educated, that if we are trying to get some home schooling institutions in place down the line, that is our mission, and we are continue to progress. We don't want to just stop here. Once we get established with our basics, we want to continue to branch off. I welcome all of you out there on this panel in particular to bring your individual projects in as a group effort so that whatever service your individual project offers, it could be part of what we're trying to do. Because the bigger the branches, the better the tree, in my opinion. So these are what we're trying to do. We offer sponsorships. Individuals or small businesses or even large corporations can do it. The minimal is $25 for a single day. The maximum is $150 for a full show segment sponsorship for the month. You know, we've had people stepping up. It's been wonderful. I want to promote Patrick Irvine with his Think Free and Be Free coaching, teaching black people how to think and live and operate businesses for themselves. He's teaching them the ways of business law, how to help black startups start up. So many things are coming forth. I got an accountant that was wonderful in helping me get along. So all of these things are coming together. And that's what we're trying to do. So when we speak about all these topic problems, this is what we're trying to do in our effort to actually build some solutions. And that is something that all of you gentlemen on this panel, with your individual projects and just with what you're saying, with your passion and with your knowledge and spreading awareness, are doing. We want to continue that to happen, but in a way where now it gives back. And we're not going to be able to get everybody to jump on board right away, but we're willing to stay in with the risk. So I want all of you to keep on the lookout for what's to come. Keep up watching our announcements on our listeners' lounge, on all of my social media pages. And if whatever touched you today, try to help somebody else get touched too, because that's the way I would rather build my network, not with a bunch of people just clicking like or coming in and have nothing to say or want to hear themselves speak, but somebody who needs to speak so somebody can hear them. So until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Continue to do what you're doing. Continue your contributions. Let's hold these athletes accountable. Let's hold these athletes accountable. Let's hold these so-called black success stories accountable for what they put out there to our children. Let us take these games and men with young men and young women going to a game, make it a teaching experience, make it a bonding and teaching experience. Let's let these athletes and athletes owners know we're not going to stand for it, so we will defund whatever it is we've been funding. We're not going to fight you. We're not going to storm your corporate offices. That's not going to work. You guys have all the security in the world. Anticipate in that action. And as I said, with an analogy before, whenever a house becomes infested with rodents, it's never because they stormed the front door. They've been in your walls, chipping away for months. Found a hole, finally got in, scoped out the joint, and said, hey, food here, boys, let's go. That's what we need to do. Chip away at the walls. Be quiet and watch, observe and move. That's where we need to be. because our children's future depends on it. And we don't have the luxury of saying, it is what it is and I'm done with it. So until tomorrow night, everybody, be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Keep the fight going. And God bless you all. Thank you for being here today.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.